Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
I suppose there are two main aims. The real principal one, I suppose, is participation. We're very, very keen that participation should increase in sport. There's a lot of inactivity in this country, which we've got to tackle. It's bad for people's health. It's bad for their mental health. And it leads to diseases, costs a fortune to the exchequer. And look at what we've seen here today. We've seen real participation in all sorts of sports, really healthy children. And that's what we want to improve. And we're absolutely determined to do that over a 10-year period. Part of it's funding and facilities as well. A lot of it's getting the message across that sports are available to everybody, and to make sure that we look after the disadvantaged, we look after those with disabilities, and we make sure that women participate. You know, there's a gender gap there, which we're determined to fill as well. But we want to get it from about 43% of the population up to 50% in 10 years. That's an extra 250,000 people active in sport. That's what we're determined to do. It's not just good as a competitive thing. This is good for communities. You saw the community here in the inner city of Dublin here today participating in all sorts of sports. It's so good, it's so healthy, it's so good for communities. We want to do it. Yeah, we don't want to see any controversy. What we want to see is that disadvantaged people get a weighting that's in their favour, so that we may make absolutely certain that if private schools are involved, that they share their facilities. And that's absolutely, we're determined to see that happens.
Where is the majority of the funding going? Into medals and already, you know, performing athletes, or into grassroots sports, well, community campaigns?
They're the twin aims. The aims are that high level performance should also be helped out and supported very, very strongly indeed by the Exchequer. We want to see more Olympic gold medals. We want to see more achievements internationally. But we also want to see at the grassroots that these people develop a community as well. Both, it's twin aims. They're both very, very important indeed. You know, the people who win medals are icons for the young people, and that's important. They're ambassadors for Ireland, so that's important as well, and we're going to support them absolutely fully. Of course we are. We want to see us doing better in the Tokyo Olympics than we did at Rio. Both Deputy Griffin, Minister of State Griffin, and I have been in touch with the GAA in the last few days. And what we have done is encourage them to come to an early settlement. We welcome the fact. And Minister Griffin was encouraging them over the weekend as well. We welcome the fact that they're talking, and we hope to see an amicable solution. But we would like to see a recognition, I think, that the community has a role to play. It'll be a factor, which is a very, very important factor, a significant factor in giving future funding, that the facilities are used for the benefit of the community as well as those who get the funding.
Minister Shane Ross this morning at the launch of the National Sports Policy Document 2018 to 2027. He was speaking at the St. Lawrence O'Toole Recreation Centre in Sherriff Street in Dublin's inner city. 10 years, nearly 10 years since the last policy document expired, actually. So we have a new 10-year plan with 57 objectives spread out across 11 chapters and 108 pages. John Green is the editor of the Sunday Independent Sports section. And he's in studio, and you've flicked through these 108 pages as quickly as you possibly could this afternoon. So this is a first reaction. In financial terms, the headline which is going around today is that in 2018, the sports budget is about 111 million. And by 2027, it will be up to 220 million per annum.
Yeah, that's going to be the thing that grabs the most attention. I'm not even sure about that figure of 111 million, where it comes from. I think, you know, it's probably a generous figure in a lot of ways, but I think the increase in funding is to be welcomed, and we have to say that those of us who have been arguing for a long time that Irish sport is underfunded would be happy to see this figure. Mm. It's how it's spent and what it's used for is going to be the next critical thing, and I suppose that's where this plan will play its part.
We heard Minister Ross there, he was asked, is this leaning more towards high performance and winning Olympic medals, or is this about grassroots and open participation? He said they're the two twin aims. From your reading, from how you're looking at how the figures break down, and I appreciate it's early days, does it lean more heavily in one way or the other, or are they split fairly evenly?
Yeah, this is the great split in sport all over the world, whether you focus on participation or whether you focus on high performance. I've always leaned in the favour of participation, because without increasing participation, everything else fails. And I do think that this document does come down on the side of participation. And that has been the way that we have been going in the last few years. Anyway, that's if you've been listening to successive sports ministers and the ministers of state, the noises that have been coming from, you know, even when Leo Varadkar was there, Michael Ring was there, Pascal Donoghue was there, it's all the time the language has been around participation.
Mm.
So I do think that that's primarily where this has looked, but I think the high performance end of things, I saw a few high performance directors in the audience today, and the big thing that they've been screaming for is multi-annual funding, and that's there.
Okay.
Multi-annual funding being, you know, funding for the full cycle of the Olympics and not just announcing funding packages every 12 months.
Okay, well, let's come to high performance in a few minutes and then let's stick with participation. So what they say is, overall participation in sport and physical activity, they want that to rise from 43% of the population to 50% of the population by 2027. So that's an extra 250,000 people being active in 10 years' time. One, how ambitious a plan is that? And then two, how much detail do we get in how they're planning to do it? So ambition, first of all, to get to 50%?
It's very ambitious.
Right.
But I mean, I think, you know, when you're talking about, we're talking about people's lives here at the end of the day. So I think, you know, you have to be ambitious and you have to be focused in how you go about delivering this. The problem we have with participation at the moment is we're hovering at around 43% of the population is considered to be active in some way. But if we continue, recent sports monitors are showing only marginal increases each time, which means what we've been doing up till now has probably reached its maximum peak. So we've plateaued.
Right.
So a little bit like with inflation, as the population gets older, if the status quo remains, what will actually happen over time is that less people will be active. That 43% figure will start to slip. So that makes the 50%, that puts it in context. So in 10 years' time, 13% of the population is aged 65 or over at the moment, and in 2026, 17% of the population.
Okay.
So we have a greying population. We also have huge issues around obesity, heart disease, depression, other mental health issues, diabetes, all of which being active have a role in combating. So I think to set a target of 50%, you know, there may be some people that may feel that they could have been even more ambitious than 50%.
So it's ambitious. Well, I had a look at some of the objectives and the ones that maybe tie in with participation in sport. There's lots of phrases like, we will endeavour to work with these groups and we will work with schools and we will educate these people and we will work with those people. And there's lots of, I guess, suitably vague kind of objectives. So I don't know how much specifics they give in terms of how they're going to even attempt to get to 50%. Like, what's the big plan? Did we get a revolution in what we're going to do in PE in schools today? Did we get a revolution in terms of what we're going to do outside of schools?
No, is the answer to that. And I actually asked Minister Griffin at the press conference today, or after the document was unveiled, this is fine, and I've worked a little bit and I've had some dealings with officials in the Department of Sport, and I know what their commitment is like, and I know they've worked on this for a very long time, along with Sport Ireland, and I actually don't have any doubts that they are very earnest about what they want to achieve here. The worry is, and this is, you've touched on actually the flaw in the entire report in that question, because the worry is that in order for it to work, you need the Department of Education on board, you need the Department of Children on board, you need the Department of Housing and Local Government on board, you need the Department of Finance on board, you need the Department of Health on board, you need the Department of Social Welfare. You need all these people to buy into it. And that's where I get worried. Minister Griffin was very confident today. He said this is a government strategy. And he says it's a strategy that will outlive the government because the commitment is there to do it. In the past, we have seen a major problem across all areas of Irish life, and the health service is a great example of it, but other areas too, where departments do not talk to each other.
Mm.
And in not talking to each other, huge problems in delivering services and delivering on plans arise. He says that things have changed in that regard, and there certainly is a little bit of movement there. If these departments are not on board, this plan will fail, and they need to get on board. I'd also worry about, you know, traditionally trying to get, when we talk about sport and we try to talk up sport, even that term sport, and it can have meanings that are off-putting for people. It's something an accountant who's there to balance books, and that's what the Department of Finance officials are there for. They don't understand this because it's not something that can be quantified. To be fair to this plan, they're going to make efforts to try and quantify the benefits from sport so that we can, obviously an increase in participation can be quantified, but it takes time for that to wash through the system. We're spending 1.5 billion a year on diseases and health issues, physical and mental, that can be reversed through being more active. So that's something that can be quantified. And they're going to use, try to find other ways to quantify the benefits that sports bring, sports tourism to the economy around events, stuff like that. But sorry, to get back to your original point, it all starts, the two principal places where this plan starts will be in the home and in the school. 70% of children's first contact with physical activity, and I prefer the term physical activity than sport because it's less exclusive, comes from a parent or from a teacher.
Yeah.
So we're putting a lot of faith in our parents and our teachers, and this is where you come to areas that have social disadvantage or that don't have those kind of benefits.
Yeah. Am I wrong as a beginning to want to expect a national sports policy document laying out the next 10 years? Should I, like, I kind of think, like, at a minimum, there should be something in there about the number of hours that are going to be done at school in PE starting from, if not this September, then certainly next September. Like, is that too much detail to look for?
I think in a policy, but I think towards the end, we're told that there's going to be a sports leadership group set up.
Right.
And this group has to be set up within 3 months of the publication of the document, which is 3 months from today.
Okay.
They then have 9 months to deliver a plan for each of the areas. So there's 57 recommendations. So they have 9 months to develop a plan how those 57 points are going to be implemented.
Okay.
And then they're going to be measured every 2 years.
Okay.
So there is a timeline there and there is, you know, a way of tracking it. But I'm fixated on schools and I just think that if there isn't a plan for schools, then the whole thing fails.
Mm. And was there, I mean, okay, I accept what you're saying about this leadership group coming into effect and then having 9 months to come up with the plans for the 57 different objectives. Was there anything in the document today with regard to specifics about what they might want to see in schools, or is it still, I mean, I don't want to put you in the spot, I appreciate you're trying to thumb through this.
They want to make sure, for example, that the sports capital programme, that the rules around it are relaxed so as to allow schools to be able to develop their facilities.
Yeah.
That's a very important area, and I mean, that's something that was obviously caused a lot of controversy already this year with Wesley College. Mm-hmm. So if we have a situation that we want our kids to be more active, the first port of call is going to be schools. The biggest problem we have in schools, it's a twin thing, is the expertise in the teaching staff to make sure that they all have the required skills. That's the first thing. And the second thing is that they have the facilities. Despite the summer that we're after having, we're predominantly a wet country and school takes place predominantly during the wet months of the year. How many schools have an indoor hall in which to do their PE classes? You know, not enough. We also are a little bit lax in terms of making physical activity compulsory for students. It's okay if you have, I have two kids, so if one of them is very interested in sport, I don't have to worry about what the school is doing because he'll do it anyway. But if I have another child who's not interested and who needs to be motivated or to be compelled to go for a walk or to go for a light jog or to learn to swim or whatever, the school and the home, they're the two interfaces where this is going to happen.
Yeah.
If it's not happening there, then we're already behind the black ball.
Because I was reading the Daily Mail is coming into schools, a lot of schools in September.
Yeah.
So this started in Scotland in 2012. A Scottish teacher was horrified when she realised no one in her class could run.
I've met her, yeah.
Have you? Yeah, okay. Yeah. So she got them to run a mile a day, 15 minutes a day. And it makes perfect sense to everybody that kids should at least run for 15 minutes a day. I mean, look, we all should. And so that's now going to roll. It's spread. And
yeah, that's going to take a while.
To come in. But so, for instance, like, is there a disparity in what the kids in a school here, there and down here are doing a week in terms of PE?
I think it's definitely a primary school level. I don't think that there are set hours.
Yeah.
Now, the numbers coming out of primary school.
That's a no-brainer to address, though, isn't it?
Yeah. And I mean, that's one the Department of Education could fix in the morning.
In the morning?
Yeah.
You were doing this much exercise per day?
Yeah. Absolutely. And this has been highlighted for a while.
Yeah. So part of this getting participation up is going to be facilities. And that's where the sports capital programme comes in. So, look, this thing blew up where back a few months ago we had 60 million euros spent and it looked great. I mean, that sounds fantastic. And you have 1,800 projects. And again, that sounds great. And then what comes out is that, well, 30 grant applications for public schools around the country were turned down. And then you have the Minister for Sport tweeting about Wesley College, private school, $6,000 a year is where fees start, getting 150,000, the maximum allowance to resurface their hockey pitch. And Loretto in Rathfarnham getting 150 grand. Both applications initially rejected. And then probably very able, well-educated parents going back and reapplying and getting the grant. And so there was a big hoo-ha around that. So what?
Yeah,
they,
and we've had the hoo-ha of the past week with the Porky Queeve thing.
Well,
and,
yeah, that's. I'll come to that actually. Yeah,
it's part of the same
issue. So today I saw a headline about how the point system for applying for your sports capital program will be reviewed. Do we have any more detail on how that's going to work?
It's not in here, but in the wake of the Wesley thing, there was a very detailed review of the sports capital program published. Which is only for the bravest of souls to wade their way through. But in essence, there's an acknowledgement that there was flaws in the system and how they were weighting certain projects.
Right.
And I mean, we still can't get away from the fact, and I know they don't like to hear it, but we still can't get away from the fact that there's an element of politics involved in the sports capital programme. It's lessening each time, and there's a big difference between now and 10 years ago.
Mm.
But there's still an element of politics involved in the sports capital programme, and I think we need to get away from that completely.
Yeah, okay. And so you mentioned the Lee Miller situation. So, I mean, look, Porky Queeve cost 80 million, and 30 million of that 80 million is taxpayers' money. We've all forked up for that. Minister Ross today talked about.
Some of it is European money, so the European taxpayer has.
Well, good on him.
Forked out as well.
We appreciate it. So, Ross today talked about how, with the sports capital programme, one of the real weightings will be whether facilities are going to be used by people in the community outside of whatever. You know, if it's the local hockey pitch and the local soccer club needs somewhere to train, that they'll be allowed to use the hockey pitch. This is going to be a big focus.
Mm. Like much of what this document that came out today, as I've said earlier, if you've been listening to the various ministers over this, particularly over the lifetime of this Fine Gael-led government, there's not much in it that's new, but what it is doing is bringing several years of kind of finding our feet and pronouncements and learnings and observations and putting them together in one document.
Right.
And from that point of view, it's a good thing.
Okay.
So the minister's statement today about, which was probably a clear reference to the Porky Queeve, although it wasn't mentioned, again, for anyone who's kind of been listening over the last couple of years, that's nothing new. There has been, for anybody applying for sports capital grants, the ability to show that your facility that you're looking to build is available to others is very important.
Okay.
I actually did like the Porky Queeve thing was interesting because it's not a community thing. I mean, it's a wider thing than that. It's a charity event.
Yeah. So high performance then. I'm seeing the budget for high performance has been trebled to 30 million. Is that 30 million over 10 years? I presume it must be. It's not 30 million per year, is it?
It's the cycle.
Okay, per cycle.
So to give comparisons for Rio.
Yeah.
So New Zealand spent in around 152 million on the cycle.
Okay.
Denmark spent 75 million.
Okay.
This is all euros. And Ireland spent 38 million.
Okay.
So an interesting thing is that the more money you spend in high performance, at some point you reach a point where it's not costing you as much.
Mm-hmm.
So Denmark spent twice as much as Ireland on their cycle and got seven times more medals.
Okay, so that increased exponentially.
Yeah.
So we're going from, say, 38 million across 4 years to...
I'm not sure what the exact figure for I think we're doubling it, isn't it?
I've read trebled here.
It could be trebled, yeah.
But then it says trebling to 30 million. So is that 30 million per annum, which would bring us up to 120 million? That would make sense.
Yeah,
that
well, then it'd be 30 million a year because we spent 38 million over 4 years.
Perfect. Okay, so we're going up to 120 million across
and we're going to target, New Zealand and in Denmark and in other countries, they have like tier one sports, tier two sports.
Mm.
I just hope we don't go down the UK route, if you don't do well, you're just completely cut.
Well, let's dive into that. So again, just to clarify, because I know on the radio facts and figures are no fun, you said New Zealand were 152 million euro across 4 years. Denmark were 75 million across 4 years. This new plan now will put Ireland at 120 million, up from 38 million across 4 years. That's very, very competitive. That's really generous.
Yeah, and it's the funding is targeted in different ways. Obviously, they're going to upskill the various NGBs and their high-performance units, but then they'll also be there's carding as well. So, like, of that 38 million, I think about 7 or 8 million of that went directly to athletes and the rest went to their governing bodies to help support their HP, setup.
Yeah. So you mentioned there about the targeting of sports. So there was stuff in the document about how, well, there'll be sports that we do well at and also sports that have a bit of prestige, that capture the imagination, like athletics. The funding will be spread less thinly, it seems.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're going to... But the question is, I mean, you know, what are we? What do we think we're good at? You know, if it was 4 years ago, you'd say boxing. If it's now, you'd say rowing. So I suppose we've got to get to grips with, and we've got to look at those NGBs, those sporting associations that we trust to deliver.
Yeah.
So there's all the technical stuff around it, which is improved governance, improved systems within each organisation, and those that can show they're capable of stepping up to the plate.
Yeah. If New Zealand, who are almost like held up as the touchstone, if they're throwing 152 million euro and we're going to throw 120 million at it over 4 years, like, we should have a decent return then.
I think money doesn't guarantee medals, but it certainly doesn't do it any harm.
No. Okay. I'm sure high performance units will come out and give their take on things over the next while. And then there's talk of a separate, independent anti-doping agency being set up.
Yeah, well, anti-doping is something that, in fairness to Sport Ireland, that we're very, very, we've always been very strong in Ireland, and with John Tracy and Una May, you know, integrity is always at the centre of everything that we do around sport in Ireland.
Yeah.
My one big worry, and I just picked out a passage that kind of highlights what that worry is, and that's okay if we going to throw all this money at it, but there's a huge amount of labour, and the only money isn't the only resource we need. We need people. We've got, I don't know, 400,000 volunteers. We need to increase the amount of people who are actually professionals who are paid to work in sport in Ireland. I think I saw a figure today of 9,000 or something like that. Could be wrong, but there's the one thing that made me feel a little bit comforted was that the report acknowledges that it is asking a huge amount of where we're at the moment in terms of the people we have available to deliver. And one of the big problems we're going to have is getting into areas that have, you know, don't have the same, that are economically disadvantaged or ethnic minorities. One of the figures I saw, which I mentioned to you beforehand, was that 95% of coaches in Irish sport are white and Irish. 70% of them are male. It's, you know, so we have a lot of work to do. And if you have a worry for the plan, it's getting enough people to deliver the resources. I mean, we've seen with the health service, you know, you can only throw money at something if you've got the expertise in place to deal with it.
Yeah. And we talked about the issue in South Inner City Dublin as well, where there's literally not a pitch to be
had. We had the St. Kevin story, which you covered here. And then we've had the St. Pat story, where there was a plan to, you know, put in an amenity, and it now looks like that it's in jeopardy and it's going to be replaced by housing. There's only so much housing we can put into these areas.
Without facilities.
Without facilities, yeah. Without schools, green spaces for people to play in.
Yeah, I saw Brian Kerr on Air Sport actually the other evening was fairly unhappy with the Pats plan and said it's just, you know, we're letting down the area by just chucking in more houses and no facilities. So to sum up broad picture then, we've picked out some of the details, and I guess more of those will emerge when people have time to really dwell on the document. It's not blowing your socks off, I guess, in some respects. You're sort of saying, look, there's more money here, which is good, particularly in the high performance area, and we're targeting participation, which is good, and 50% of the population by 2027 being active is a very good target. In the main, you're saying there's not much new here, there's no kind of revolution here. This is just the ideas that we've been gradually coming to over the last number of years are now actually just written down in a policy document, and implementation over the next year, the next 9 months with this leadership group is pretty key.
I mean, I don't think I should be critical of it, because I've been one of the people who's been calling for this to be published, and now it's here and now we have it and now we've got things that we can measure our performance by. But yes, I think that sums it up very well. It's a collection of things that we've been coming to understand over the last few years in watching what is happening around the rest of the world and in learning from our own mistakes. With the GAA in Ireland, we have a particular environment in that, you know, for the entire 20th century, our governments decided not to get involved in sport at all, except to show up on podiums when, you know, we won Tour de France or got, you know, got knocked out of quarterfinals in the World Cup. But there was no meaningful strategy there. So at least now, we're very late coming to the table when you compare it to the likes of New Zealand or Denmark or whatever. but at least now we're there and we understand what we're doing a lot better. Mm. We've a lot more expertise. And if you look around, if you go to a conference now and you look at the profile of the people who are leading the various sporting organisations, they're young, they're energetic, they've got lots of ideas, they've been abroad, they've seen how other countries do things, and they're bringing it back here.
That's an optimistic note then, you're saying?
Yeah, I think we should. I think that's a good way to finish, because I do think it's important that we acknowledge that this document is, it's vital for the country. It's not just about sport, it's about making sure that our, you know, we're a healthy population, that physically and mentally we're well. Mm. And I mean, we've huge issues around that. At the moment, we're on course to be one of the second most obese nation in Europe, I think, is it, or in the world?
Very soon, yeah, so, in Europe, yeah.
So anything we can do, there was a story in our paper last week about, you know, a guy that couldn't be weighed, the 50 stone weighing scale in the hospital couldn't weigh him. So, I mean, we have a huge problem.
Yeah.
So sport, that's why I don't like getting fixated on medals too much, even though we all feel good when we do well at the Olympics.
And yeah, well,
I think there's a bigger picture.
Yeah, well, in fairness, the minister said they're the twin aims, elite performance and also grassroots, so we'll see. But like, what, you're not suddenly inspecting to every town in Ireland will now have a running track and every town in Ireland will have perfect facilities. That's an unrealistic hope for the next 10 years.
Yes, but I do think we'll have more streamlining of facilities. And the idea, and it's that's one of the legacies of the GAA community, of which, you know, I'm a member of a club and we've just opened a very small little new dressing rooms and things. And our idea in our small club is that we want to throw those doors open to anyone that wants to use them in the area.
Yeah.
So
is that the European model, municipal centres? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that we have community places where they talk in the document about community sports hubs. And I think most GAA clubs around the country, who are the ones who are probably best equipped at the moment because of the facilities they have, to become those hubs, would be thrilled to welcome new people into their, you know, the idea that the gates are closed and, you know, you, unless you've paid your membership, you're not welcome here. Those days are over. And if you are going to be like that, then the government doesn't want to know about you and you're going to be on your own pretty quickly.
Okay. John, I very much appreciate you doing all this at short notice. I know it was plenty of work to get through. I'm sure you'll be writing about it in the Sunday Independent this weekend. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Joe.
Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.